Welcome to the Wealthsteading Podcast. This is episode 34. It's October 9th, 2014. I'm your host, John Pugliano. I'm also the founder and money manager at investablewealth.com. Here at the Wealthsteading Podcast, we talk about all things related to wealth and ultimately related to your freedom, because money may not buy happiness, but it can buy freedom. So during each episode, we review one or more of the 10 wealth-building principles, and we apply that to the daily events. We apply that to what's going on in the stock market, or to listener questions, or sometimes we'll get granular and we'll drill down on a specific topic. Regardless, though, whether it's a listener's question, or a topic that I came up with, or whether we're just talking about the market or the events of the day, everything is done through the filters of the 10 wealth-building principles. These aren't something I learned or read about in a book. These are principles that I developed over nearly 30 years of my life of investing in the stock market, building my own wealth, working in corporate America, being an entrepreneur. I can't guarantee they'll work for you, but I know they worked for me, and that's why I share them on this podcast. I'd like to see everybody buckle down, become disciplined savers, focus on building their net worth, and worrying about things that really matter in their life, not frivolously wasting their money, or being trapped in consumer debt or something else that Madison Avenue is trying to sell us that we really don't need. Well, I do want to start off by apologizing. It's been about a week or so since I've got a show out, and I really do miss doing these podcasts. I get great feedback from you listeners, and I know that you enjoy them, but I myself get a great deal out of them. I put a lot of show prep time in. Whenever I talk about a concept or some kind of a topic for you, I go in and I do a lot of research. When I talk about the stock market or current events of the day, and I put it in a podcast form, it forces me to really drill down and make sure that I know what I'm talking about, to question myself and make sure that I have sound logic and that I thought things out rationally. So if nothing else, I enjoy doing these podcasts because I become a better investor. My logic and my reasoning become sharper because I force myself to think things through maybe more than I normally would. And because I'm always looking for interesting topics for you, it also forces me to pay attention more. So when I don't record a show in about a week, I really miss it. And it's good to be back behind the microphone. In this episode, we are going to talk briefly about the markets because they've been so volatile. And then we're also going to break down for you the anatomy of a trade. We're going to start from the very beginning and give you the highlights of what a diligent investor would consider as they make those decisions to buy a particular stock, and then even talk about the nuts and bolts of what that trade involves. As far as specifically, what do? When do you decide to buy it? When do you decide to sell it? Do you do a market order? And we'll discuss some of the terminology that if you're not a frequent trader, you may not be aware of. I'm going to keep it all at a high level, though. So even if you're an expert trader or maybe someone that never plans to trade your own stocks, I think you will want to listen in. You can get some of my guidance and my experience on the way I would do things. And then also at the end of it, we'll wrap up by talking about, you know, things like tax consequences, when to take a profit, things like that. As we go through the trading process, I'm going to be using our current events that we're in, this current market that we're in now, to kind of tee things up. So you'll also be getting some of my impressions about where we're at in this current stock market. Before we get started, I do want to mention something that we're going to try here, and this was prompted by some listeners that had asked me about doing some type of an incentive or some type of a contest, and I feel bad about not putting out a show in the past week or so. So to make up for you for that, I am going to offer you a contest. So let me describe the contest to you. First of all, here's the prize, and I think you're going to like this because many of you have already requested it. The winner of this contest will receive a one-hour consultation with me over the phone or over Skype. If they happen to be local, which I think is probably unlikely, I would meet with them in person. But most likely it's going to happen over the telephone or over Skype. I guarantee it will be at least 1 hour, and it'll be at least one phone call. Depending upon how things go, obviously we may require more time than that, or maybe we'd want to have a couple conversations. Point is, though, that I know a lot of you had wanted to talk to me. I obviously can't return all your emails or call each one of you up. But I do want to make this offer available, and we'll see how it goes. If it works out, then perhaps we'll do it more often in the future. So if you win, the grand prize winner, 1 hour consultation with me. Now, I do have to say, the information we talk about on the phone call, just like all the information I share with you in this podcast, none of it in no way is ever meant to be taken as specific investment advice or an offer to buy or sell a stock or any of that. These are all for just educational purposes. I do this to try and help people decrypt what's going on in the financial market, to help them be better consumers, to help them ultimately be better investors so that they can build their wealth and their personal freedom. On this podcast, we don't give specific financial advice, nor will I be able to do that for you in the phone conversation. I just won't be able to spend enough time to really know your particular situation where I can do that. So what I want you to think of this call as is more of a coaching call or a mentorship. It's an opportunity for you to ask me about any topic, anything, whatever's on your mind. It can be specifically about stocks. It can involve other areas of investing. You can ask me about ideas you may have for starting your own business, career guidance, whatever you want to talk about. It's your hour. That's what we'll do. And in fact, to make sure that you get the most amount of time on the phone call, once the winner has been announced, that person can specifically send me an email and already have a list of questions or give me whatever kind of background information they think is relevant. That way I can read it, I can be prepared ahead of time, and we won't be wasting the phone call just doing background information. Well, I did want to put this out for you because I know that many of you have expressed an interest to talk to me, and I have had the opportunity to talk to a few of you. So there it is. That's what the winner's going to receive. Now, here's the rules. To be eligible to win, here's what you have to do. I want you to go back and review the 10 wealth-building principles. Now, remember, they're the foundation for everything we do here. So take a listen to those 10 wealth-building principles, and then I want you to determine which one you think is the least downloaded of all of those. And I want you to send that to me through the website. Now, the reason I mention this is obviously I keep track of my statistics, and I'm always interested to see which episodes people do and don't listen to. And there's definitely a dichotomy of the 10 wealth-building principles, and it doesn't necessarily go in order. It isn't like the 10th one is less listened to than the first three or four or something because people got tired of listening to them. That's not the case at all. But there are definitely some episodes that get listened to more than others. I want you to look at that. I want you to tell me which one you think is the least downloaded. So then you'll go to the website, which is wealthsteading.com. You'll see the contact page on there. And all you need to do is put in your answer. You know, you think number one or number two or, wealth building principle number five is the least listened to. Just put that in the comments section, put in your email. And then what I'll do after the cutoff period, now I'm assuming that more than one person is going to get the right answer. So I'll take a random drawing from all the people that submitted the correct answer. So I know that you guys that are looking at cutting corners are saying, well, I'll just send John 10 separate comments and I'll say that each one of the episodes is the least listened to one. So that way you'll be in the drawing. Well, obviously, if I see you're doing that, I'll throw your name out. So let's keep it above board. Let's just do this for fun. We'll see how many responses I get. And like I say, I'm assuming more than one of you is going to get the right answer. So we'll have a drawing and then I'll announce that after the contest expires. Now, I do want to say that this is open to anybody that would want me to call them that's in the continental United States, because that way I can make the call for free. And some of you may be saying, hey, John, what do you care about paying for a phone call? Well, how do you think I got to be financially independent, right? I watch every penny. But I really want to have this open for as many people as possible. So even if you are outside the United States and you're willing to do it over Skype, which we could do for no cost, that's fine with me. Now, as far as the deadline, the contest is effective on October 9th, which is the airing of this episode, and it will run through October 26th, which is a Sunday, and the cutoff time will be 11 p.m. West Coast time. So that's 11 p.m. Pacific time, October 26th. I'll announce this on the upcoming podcast so that many of you get to participate. Oh, and I will add to this too. I'm not doing this to build an emailing list. If you know me, if you've been listening to this podcast at all, if you follow my website, my blogs, you'll notice that there's no commercial advertising. I don't have any affiliate links. I'm not trying to sell any books or trying to sell newsletters or any of that kind of stuff. So I really don't have anything up for sale. What I do, and I will reiterate, I am a money manager. I offer that portfolio management service specifically to clients that qualify for the type of stock investing that I do. I don't talk a lot about it in my blog posts or specifically in these podcasts, because I know those of you that would be interested in this service, if you like what you're hearing, you're going to seek me out. I don't have to try and promote it and advertise it. You guys know how to find me if you want it. Otherwise, the podcast, my comments, my thoughts, my opinions, my blog posts, that's all free. So I'm not trying to sell anything, but I obviously need your email address so that I can get in touch with you and we can make arrangements to do the phone call. I guess if you just wouldn't leave me your phone number and your first name, I can announce who you were and call you that way. In any case, I bring this up too because I did get not too long ago a response from someone that apparently had gone to the website and had signed up to subscribe to the website or to be notified whenever I release a new podcast. And then they were angry that they had to put their email address in. So the point I'm trying to bring up here is that if you want to subscribe to the website to know if new episodes are coming out, you'd obviously have to tell me what your email was so that we could email you to let you know that there's a new episode. I'm not collecting emails because I want to put you on a spam list. In fact, again, if you look at both of my websites, that's investablewealth.com, my advisory firm website, or the podcast website, wealthsteading.com, on the contact forms, I've made them so that you can remain anonymous. You don't have to put in an email address. You can simply just send me a comment. You can say, hey, John, your show stinks or whatever, and you don't have to tell me who you are. There's no mandatory fields to fill out. However, if you don't give me your email address, I can't reply back to you. I'm just saying, okay? Now, in the many months I've been doing this show, I've only gotten one of those, so I know that most of you understand how it works and you get it. In any case, if you're afraid of me having your email address, and you can think of some other way that I can contact you to set up the call in case you win, that's fine with me. Just put it in the comments section. We can deal with it that way. But please do know, I'm not trying to generate an email list. I already have too much going on in my life to worry about sending people out spam emails, nor do I think it would be a very good way to utilize my time. I can make money a whole lot of other ways. So enough said on that. So there's the contest. Pick out the least listened to of the wealth building principles. Go to wealthsteading.com on the contact section. Send me a message. Tell me which one you think is the least listened to. Let me know how to get in touch with you. You have from October 9th, 2014 till October 26th, 11 p.m. West Coast time. I'm excited. I'm looking forward to this. I think it's going to be fun to spend an hour or so with the winner and see what kind of questions they have for me. Well, enough of these housekeeping details. Let's take a quick look at the stock market. Nothing has really changed that much over the last week or so since we've last talked about this. The market remains in correction. It remains extremely volatile. The market will have a 1 or so percent swing one day and close down. The next day, it'll have a 1.5% swing and close up. The major indexes are all performing erratically. They're very sloppy. They have wide trading during the day. For the most part, there tends to be more volume when the market's down than when the market's up. Although that wasn't true of the performance yesterday on October 8th, the market decidedly closed up and closed up in extremely high volume. And while that's a good sign, I'll get to it in a minute, it still doesn't detract from the fact that this is an extremely volatile market. I think yesterday's performance on the NASDAQ, there was something like over a 2% move during the day. It was down like as much as maybe 7 basis points and then ended up closing nearly 2%. So you had almost like a 3% swing there just in one day. That's a very loose market. That's very volatile. That's not something that I look forward to trading in. I mean, hey, if you just want to go out and speculate, that's fine. But you don't bet the farm on it. You don't put all your retirement money in that kind of a market because it can just as easily swing up 2 or 3% as it can swing down. And in one day, that's a lot of money to lose. The other thing I want to mention that although yesterday's action did close up significantly, like I say, almost 2% on the NASDAQ and an extremely high volume, the downside to that is that during that trading day, the market had actually breached the low that it had encountered earlier in the week. And so that kind of resets the clock in terms of this correction. I like to follow the Bill O'Neill method. Now, Bill O'Neill is the founder of Investor's Business Daily. I talk about that publication frequently. I'd refer you to that website, which is investors.com. You can look at the indexes that I'm talking about right now. You can see the sloppy action. You can see the big moves in volume for the day on the NASDAQ, on the S&P 500. Those are easily accessed right from the free section of investors.com. But the reason I bring up Bill O'Neill is he has a strategy where he always waits at least 4 days after the low point of any market correction. And the market is currently in correction. It's been in correction for, I don't know, about 2 weeks now. The lowest point prior to yesterday had been on October 2nd. But as I said, yesterday, although the market did close up significantly, during the trading day, it had traded down and went below that low that had been previously reached on October 2nd. So that resets the clock. And so we want to wait another 3 or 4 days from yesterday to see which direction the market's going to go into. And this is what I talk about as thin ice. I've mentioned this in previous podcasts. If you're out ice fishing up in Minnesota or up on Lake Erie or somewhere, and you don't know if the ice is thick enough, you just don't go walking out there, right? You just don't drive your snow machine or your pickup truck out onto the ice. You're smarter than that. You're patient. You don't want to see your pickup truck go falling into the lake, or nor do you want to walk out in the lake and you fall in just on your own weight. So what we do, we wait for our neighbor to drive out there in his pickup truck or his snowmobile, or let him walk out there. Now that may sound like a cruel thing, and I say it a little bit facetiously, but I think you get the point. You see, there are plenty of people that want to be on the cutting edge. There are plenty of people that like to take risk. There are plenty of people that want to speculate. There are plenty of people that get a thrill about being the first one to drive out onto the frozen lake in their Ford F-150 pickup truck. So let them do it. Let's make sure they don't fall through the ice. If it looks safe, if the ice is sturdy, then we'll go out on the ice. That's the same approach we want to take with the stock market. So once we break a new low, let things stabilize for a few days. take 3 or 4 days off. Use that as an opportunity to build your watch list. If the market goes up like crazy in those 3 days and you miss an opportunity, so what? All you missed was an opportunity cost. What if the market ended up dropping 5 or 6 or 10% because the downtrend wasn't over yet? So you can never be sure, but you can be prudent. And waiting those 2 or 3 days, letting things stabilize, that's what a wise investor would do. And so since the market hit that intraday low yesterday, October 8th, I don't plan on jumping into the market anytime over these next, say, 3 or 4 days. I'm just going to watch it and see what happens. The other thing we want to be concerned about in this market is not only do we have wide, sloppy trades, and again, if you go to investors.com, right on the front page, you're going to see a chart of the NASDAQ index. And you can see, you know, back in late August, the variability during each day was very tight. You can see these really tight little bars representing each day's trade, representing the movement of the stock for that particular day. Now, fast forward to October, and you see very long, very broad bars that represent each day's trade. That means that the stock is very volatile each day. Now, we don't need a fancy algorithm to know that that means that there's a lot of variability. And what makes it particularly dangerous is that since late August, early September, that overall trend keeps moving down and down and down. So this last 10 days, and for sure over the last, you know, 5 trading days or so, the market's been absolutely below the 50-day moving average. That's a red flag. That's an indication to us that the market maybe hasn't reached its bottom yet. It may have lower to go. So we want to hopefully see that volatility decrease, or at least be volatile in the upward direction and not volatile down one day and volatile up the next day. And then we want to see that daily price breaking above the 50-day moving average. Remember, oftentimes the indexes or a particular stock will hit that 50-day moving average as it's coming down, and then it bounces off of it and that stock continues to go up. So when it bounced off the 50-day average, that was an opportunity for you to use as a buying point, an entry point into that stock. Well, as I say, in this particular market that we're in a mild correction. About 10 trading sessions ago, the indexes broke through their 50-day average, and then they've been either hovering right at the 50-day or have been below the 50-day. In this case, the 50-day moving average isn't acting as a floor or as support where the market can come down, hit it, and bounce off. Think of a ball. The market comes down like a ball, it hits the floor, and then it bounces back up. That's what you want to see in a healthy market. That's when the 50-day moving average is providing support. But in the market we're in right now, it's the inverse of that. That 50-day moving average is acting as resistance. It's acting as a glass ceiling. Go to investors.com, look at a chart of the NASDAQ. It's right on the front page. You'll see what I'm talking about. 10 days ago, the NASDAQ was hovering right around that 50-day moving average. The last 5 or 6 trading sessions or so, it's been firmly below the 50-day moving average. And then every time it moves up, it either hits that average and closes back down, or it never comes quite high enough to even hit the average. That was the case yesterday. Even though the market was up nearly 2% in very strong volume, the NASDAQ still fell short of breaking through that 50-day moving average. And so that's why we have concern. That's why I'm currently not buying stocks. I'm waiting to make sure the ice is thick enough to go out on it. So we'll keep watching the index over the next few days, and we'll see what happens. We're going to be patient. Now, as far as the anatomy of a trade, that's the main topic that I wanted to talk about today. And I've reviewed bits and pieces of this in previous episodes, but over the next few minutes, I just want to talk at a high level, breaking this down into a little of the nuts and bolts, and walking you through specific steps. Now, because we're in a market correction, I'm not actually going to throw out a real stock that I think we can invest in, because as I said, right now, we're not investing. We're sitting out. We're waiting to see what happens with the indexes. But short of that, we will kind of go through all the steps. So first of all, we want to identify a trend. I always talk about a trend. Look at natural events, or look at long-term secular or short-term confined trends, maybe niche trends that you think are going on in the marketplace. For example, I'll throw out a few of them right now. Now, these could be Now, I'm throwing these out right off the top of my head, and I haven't classified them into short-term or long-term, and sometimes we don't know. Sometimes a short-term trend can end up being a long-term trend. But let's think of some things that are going on in the news right now. There's the Ebola scare. There's a continued aggravation of Russia with the Ukraine. There's the problems in the Middle East with ISIS. And then just the general uncertainty of the Middle East overall, in spite of what we're doing in Syria and in Iraq with ISIS. But that's going on. We have a major secular slowdown of growth in Europe, possibly deflation, possibly recession, extremely low interest rates over there, which are really unjustified when you consider the high debt and how unstable some of these economies are, like Spain and Italy, and they have interest rates that are lower than what we have in the United States. That's a definite anomaly that you want to take into consideration. Because of this general overall slowdown in Europe as well as in Asia, we're seeing oil prices, petroleum prices coming down, not only in the United States where we have fracking and things like that going on, but also in Brent crude. And Brent is what's traded overseas. I won't get into this in this episode, but this would be something for a special episode we should talk about. You may not be aware of this, but the United States, since the 1970s, because of the Arab embargo, we have not been allowed to export petroleum. And we can export petroleum products, so like motor oil or gasoline or diesel, things that are made from petroleum, we can export those. But Congress passed a law, and there have been a few exceptions lately, but up till recently, there was a firm law that you couldn't export raw petroleum products. So you couldn't pump oil out of the ground and then ship it unrefined, okay? So because of that, there was a disparity in the world price of oil and the U.S. price of oil. And again, just recently in this past year, when the United States has actually become the number one producer of petroleum, and to some extent, it's really disrupted the supply chain and put a lot more oil onto the market than anyone expected. Well, that made a big disparity in the price difference between the benchmark U.S. petroleum product, which is West Texas Intermediate, and then the oil that's traded on the global market, which is Brent, B-R-E-N-T, Brent crude. So you have a price for Brent, and you have a price for the West Texas Intermediate. Well, at various times over the last, 18 months, 2 years or so, there's been a huge difference in those prices. Sometimes, 25, 30%, maybe more, where Brent was much more expensive than the U.S. oil. Because remember, we have all this excess oil in the United States. We couldn't export it as oil. We had to convert it into gasoline or diesel or something like that. And that's why, about a year ago, you could really make some money on some gas refining companies because their feedstock price was so low because you had all this excess oil. They could turn it into gasoline and then export it and sell it on the global market at a much higher price than what we were paying for gas in the United States. I digress, but in any case, right now, even though we're still not exporting oil products, the spread between West Texas Intermediate and Brent crude has come way down. Now, Brent is still a little bit more, but nowhere near those 20, 25, 30%. It's more around a historical average, more, just a few percent difference. And when I talk about looking at trends, I think a lot of that is because of the overall global slowdown. There's not enough demand for petroleum-based products. And so countries like Iraq and Iran and Saudi Arabia and Nigeria and all these oil producers, they have a glut of oil right now. The United States is awash in it. And then because things are still slow in places like India and China and Europe, they don't need it as well. And so petroleum prices are collapsing. We see the same thing with other products, copper, even the precious metals, gold and silver. There's a real glut right now in the commodities markets. So again, to me, that points to a global slowdown. Is that a short-term trend or a long-term trend? I don't know. We're just trying to develop this. I want you to see how the thought process goes. So all these things are going on right now in the world market. Think about them. Do you see any patterns? Do you see any dots that you can connect? Well, let's try and connect a couple of them. Well, one thing we know is that for now anyways, the price of oil is coming down. So that's bad news for the oil producers, but that's good news for oil consumers. So maybe companies that are, like transportation companies, airlines, trucking companies, that could be good for them. So that's a pro. Now, on the downside, this Ebola scare, and whether it's real or not, I have no way of knowing, but I do know it's affecting the stock market. And it's in particular, it's affecting right now airline stocks. So lower fuel costs, that's a pro. That's a good thing for airline stocks. On the other hand, Ebola scare, maybe there's going to be travel bans, things like that. Maybe there's going to be extra delays and screening of passengers, and it's just going to cost the airlines more money. That's all a negative for the airline stock. Well, you can kind of war game that out in your mind and say, hey, should I speculate? Should I take a gamble in airline stocks? Because I think this Ebola thing is going to blow over, but I don't think that this lower cost of petroleum is a short-term trend. I think it's a long-term trend. So yes, maybe the airline stocks will continue to go down for the next couple weeks or so, but then the Ebola scare will blow over. Oil prices will be really low. That'll help the airline's bottom line. And then, by January, when they announce fourth quarter results, profits will be way up for airline stocks. See, that's a way of putting together these trends. Now, the same thing could be said maybe for other transportation companies like trucking companies. Now, obviously, they're not international like an airline, so they're probably not going to benefit or be hurt by Ebola, but they are going to benefit from the lower cost of petroleum products. So you could start looking at long-haul freight companies, things like that, trucking companies. Another thing, and I didn't talk about this on the trends, but another definite trend has been the rising dollar. Now, over the last few days, the dollar has come down, but still, over the last 6 to 8 weeks, it has been in an upward trajectory. So now put that into the equation. A higher dollar means that companies in America that export their products, they're going to be penalized because their products will cost more overseas in their overseas markets. A higher dollar also means that companies that are based overseas or have a lot of their operations overseas are going to see negative impacts of exchange rates, right? If you have a company, say you're Microsoft, and you're making a lot of money in Europe, but when you translate that euro back into U.S. dollars at the end of the quarter, because the U.S. dollar is so strong, you're going to have a negative exchange rate impact, and that's going to affect your earnings. So big exporters or large multinational companies that have a lot of overseas operations, they are all going to be negatively impacted by this trend in the rising dollar. Okay, well, is that a short-term trend or a long-term trend? How does that factor into our petroleum products? How does that factor into Ebola scare? Well, again, let's look at the airlines. What if we pick an airline that doesn't have international routes, so now they're less affected, and they still maybe will be affected if there's a big, major problem with Ebola. But generally, if they're confined to the United States, they're going to have less of a problem than someone like Delta, which flies over the world. Also, if you pick an airline that's, strictly a U.S. carrier and they don't operate overseas, well, obviously they're not impacted by the rising high dollar. So again, someone like Delta would be penalized in their overseas routes or their overseas operations, where somebody maybe like Southwest, who's U.S.-based, whose routes are, as far as I know, only in the U.S., they're not going to be impacted by the rising dollar. They're not going to be impacted by exchange rates. They're not going to be, or at least would be less impacted by an Ebola scare. So now do you see how you're focusing down? You started way out there. You started looking at trends. You looked at both natural trends, things that are affected by nature, things like a pandemic. That would be the same as a hurricane or some kind of, act of nature, act of God. And then you're also looking at secular trends and just regular trends and events. So we split those up into two different categories. And you try and put them together. And then you drill down to a specific industry, like, for example, the airlines. And then from there, you break it down even further, to where we said, hey, let's stay away from the international carriers. Let's just focus on a U.S. carrier like Southwest. Now, again, I want to reiterate, I'm not advising anybody to buy Southwest. Southwest is just an example. It's not on my watch list. I have no intentions of buying Southwest stock. I'm just trying to illustrate and show you how you may want to think through this, how our course of thought went into transportation companies, how our thoughts started from high-level trends down to specific industries, and then down to specific stocks. And then even within the different industries, we looked at transportations overall, we looked at airlines, and then we said, we could also just do this with trucking companies. That's the way you want your thoughts to progress as you're developing a watch list and as you're developing either sectors to invest in or specific stocks to invest in. Now, once you've done that, once you have either a specific industry or a specific idea of maybe what stocks you want to trade, then we go down and we break it down, we become even more granular. And since we talked about Southwest, let's focus on them. Again, this is strictly educational purposes. I'm not making a recommendation or offering any type of advice at all on Southwest stock. So how would we research Southwest? Well, again, just to keep things very simple, go over to a free website service like Yahoo Finance. And again, that all work. It doesn't have to be Yahoo. It could be Google Finance. It could be CNBC's website. There's a million of them out there. Pick whichever one you like. But for my purposes, right now, I'm looking at Yahoo Finance. There's a little menu there that does a stock lookup or a quote lookup. I happen to know that Southwest Airlines, the ticker symbol is LUV, love. And I don't know the history on that. I know they always used to talk about loving their customers, loving their the people that flew with them. So when they got listed on the stock exchange, I'm not sure if they picked LUV because it was the love they had for their customers, or if it was because their primary base of operation was Love Field, L-O-V-E, Love Field in Dallas. I don't know the particular reason for that, but that's why their symbol was love. However, for illustrative purposes here, I'm not going to do that. I'm just going to pretend I don't even know the symbol, and I'm going to type in Southwest. And I think Yahoo, most of these services, will look up the symbol for you automatically. Yeah, so I got in just south and then a W for Southwest. and it brought up a list of things, and LUV was at the top of the list. So I'm going to click on that, and it takes me right to the quote page, right to the summary page for Southwest Airlines. Now, as I'm recording this, I see it's trading for $32.11. The stock was down today about 37 basis points. In after hours trading, it went even lower. It went as low as $31.92. I can look right on this page, and I get tons of free information. I can see what the high and low price was, for the last year, so it gives me some idea of volatility. I can see what the price per earnings ratio is. I can see what the earnings of the stock is. I can see what the beta is. Beta being a technical term for what type of volatility the stock has in relationship to the S&P 500. So a beta of 1 would be equal to the S&P 500. So if you had a beta higher than 1, that would indicate that it's more volatile than the S&P 500. If it's lower than 1, and in this case it is lower than 1, it's 0.5, it would be less volatile than the S&P 500. So from that aspect, Southwest Airlines looks pretty stable. It shows me on here when its next earnings date is due, which incidentally is up in a couple weeks. We are in earnings season right now. I can see that it has a 24-cent dividend, which is about a 70 basis point yield. Just lots of free information right on this front page. On the menu, I can also look over to the left-hand side. It shows me key statistics. It tells me the profile of the company if I don't know what it is. I can look up SEC filings. I can look up competitors that the company has, what industry it's in, headline news. Just more information that you're ever going to want on a stock you can get for free right on Yahoo Finance. And again, same thing on Google Finance or MSNBC or any of these websites. They all do it now. For our purposes, though, I want to key in on just a couple of things. Now, what we're talking about right now are the fundamentals of the stock. So first we looked at trends, and then we nailed it down to trying to look at a particular stock or at least a particular industry so we could look at some stocks. That was the trend part of it. Now we're in what's called the fundamental analysis. And again, we're just doing this at a very high level, a very cursory level. I want you to get an idea of it. And in the fundamental part, as a name would imply, we're looking at the fundamentals of the stock. How much debt does it have? What kind of industry is it in? What's its profit? What's its dividend? What's its yield? These are just fundamental things about the stock. And what we're looking for, what I look for anyways, is that the stock is sound. Listen, there's, I don't know how many stocks out there, 7,000, 10,000 stocks you can trade. I mean, there's more stocks to be traded than you have money to trade, right? So because of that, why buy risky stocks? Why buy stocks that have poor fundamentals? I don't fool with them. I don't trade penny stocks. I generally don't trade stocks that don't have a history of making a profit. I don't trade stocks that have poor liquidity. And by that, I mean that they don't have a lot of shares trading in a given day, right? I don't buy a stock that only has, 20,000 or 10,000 shares traded in a day. For example, Southwest Airlines, on an average day, it has over 6 million shares traded. Yesterday, it had almost 12 million shares traded in one day. That's a very liquid stock. That's what you want. Whenever the time comes for you to sell your stock, you want to be able to just put in a price and hit the button and say sell. You don't have to worry about liquidity of it, whether it's going to be hard to get rid of. So that's why I focus on stocks that just have good fundamentals. And again, I'm not going to go into all the details here, but just the things I said. Are they making a profit? Do they pay a dividend? What's their price per earnings ratio? How many shares are traded in a day? What's the market capitalization of it? All that information is right available just on this first page at Yahoo. $22 billion is the market capitalization of Southwest Airlines. So if you took all the stocks that they had out there, all their float, and you multiplied that times $32.11, which is the price that the stock closed at, that number would equal $22 billion. That's what it would cost to buy all the shares of that company. That's why that's what it's called. That's its value. That's its market capitalization. If I want to look at more fundamentals about this stock, I can click over on key statistics. Again, there's a whole list of things. It not only tells me the market capitalization is $22 billion, it tells me the enterprise value is almost $21 billion. Right away, that tells me that this company not only does not have debt, but it also tells me that they have about $1 billion, in fact, more than $1 billion, about $1.1 or $1.2 billion in cash reserves. I know that because that's the difference between the enterprise value and the market capitalization. Remember what I said. Market capitalization is how much it would cost to purchase the stock if you went out and bought all the shares that are available on the open market. That's the market capitalization. That's $22 billion. But the enterprise value takes into account debt. And so really what the enterprise value is, it's sort of like net worth. It tells you what the company would be worth if you just totally liquidated everything and sold everything, sold all the assets, sold the stock, and then had to repay the debt. So it's like the mortgage on your home. It helps you determine what equity is in the company. And in this case, like I say, it's about $1.1 billion that they have in cash value. So although you'd have to buy the stock for $22 billion, they've got another, you know, almost $2 billion, $1.2 billion in cash that you would get back. And that's why the enterprise value is less than the market capitalization. Now, if the enterprise value is more than the market capitalization, then you know that the company has debt. But even if you didn't know that, you could scroll down a little bit midway through the page and it tells you right there, what's the company's long-term debt? What's the company's short-term debt? How much cash do they have on hand? And as I scroll down there, I can see, well, you know what? They have in long-term debt or in total debt, they have $2.8 billion in long-term debt. Now, I just told you they didn't have any debt, but I got that by looking at the difference between the enterprise value and the market capitalization. But here's the point. They do have $2.8 billion in debt. But on the other hand, they have $4 billion in cash on hand. And so when you subtract the $4 billion from the $2.8, you come up with that $1.1, $1.2 billion that I said they had in cash reserves. So the reason they're carrying this debt, though, is because interest rates are so low, right? We've talked on this show many times about how the Federal Reserve is artificially keeping interest rates low. And what companies do, like Southwest, is rather than having all the cash on hand, they'll go out and buy things. They'll go out and take on debt, maybe to buy back stock or something like that. But in Southwest's case, they've obviously run the numbers and they feel that it's better to have $2.8 billion in debt because of the tax advantages and low interest rates than it is to have that in just total cash. But bottom line, they have about $1.1, $1.2 billion in extra cash just sitting around. That's a good thing to have. You can see what their operating cash flow is. All this information readily available. And again, I've already gotten down too far in the weeds on this than I wanted to, but that's how you determine what the fundamentals are. And I can't tell you what's right for you. There are people that will argue, oh, you don't want to go above this debt ratio or you don't want to go above this price per earnings ratio or whatever. You know what? These are like trading algorithms. They all work until they don't. You know, what's the difference between a Ford and a Chevy or between a Mercedes and a BMW? You can argue all day long. Many times, it's a difference without a distinction. You got to pick what works for you. The most important thing is the consistency of it. Have a consistent plan. Have a method of screening stocks and then stick to it. Just make sure you're investing in stocks that have good fundamentals. You don't want to invest in a company that's going to go out of business tomorrow. For example, that would be a company that probably has a lot of debt or has decreasing sales, has poor profit performance. Those are all things you can see just by looking at the numbers. That's why they call it fundamental analysis. Now let's move on to the next phase, which is called technical analysis. So again, let's review. We identified a trend by looking at what's going on in the physical world and in the natural world. We narrowed that down to some particular industries or maybe some particular stocks. Then let's say we looked at a series of stocks and we picked out the ones that have the best fundamentals. Good trading volume, they're liquid stocks, they don't have a lot of debt. And we can look for other things too that we didn't talk about. You know, who's the management? How long has the management been in place? Is the management buying shares of stock or selling shares of stock? Again, you can get all this on Yahoo Finance or Google Finance or whatever method you use. It's all out there, it's all free. But let's move on to the next step, which is the technical analysis. Now, technical analysis refers to looking at the charts. And it's more than that, but just to keep it simple, it basically means reading charts or analyzing charts, looking for patterns, looking to determine what's the personality of this stock. And I'm still on Yahoo Finance. I just clicked on the 5-year chart for Southwest Airlines. I'm just looking at a simple chart that takes me back to somewhere around 2010. I can see that this stock fluctuated for a number of years right around $10 a share, from roughly around January of 2010 to about February of 2013. This stock, you know, went up, it'd go up to $12, down to $9, up to $11, down to $10, back and forth for about 3 years, almost 3 years. Then around the summer of 2013, it broke out. And if you don't understand that terminology, just go look up this chart of Southwest Airlines. Look at a 5-year chart and you'll see specifically on August 26, 2013, That was a low point from the summer. And from there it went. And, you know, again, that stock had been fluctuating up and down right around $10 a share. August of 2013, it got up right around $13 a share, and it took off from there, and it went all the way up to that $32, $33 it is today. Almost in a straight line. If you're familiar with military terms, you'd say it's right at like about a, you know, 1 o'clock or a 1:30, 2 o'clock on a dial of a clock, just straight up, up and to the right. Now, of course, there's bumps along the way. I don't want to imply it's a straight line, but you get my point. If you'd have invested in the summer of 2013 and held that stock through, you know, this past summer, you would have well more than doubled your money. It had gone from about $13 a share up to its high this summer was $34 a share. So the reason I'm pointing all this out is we're looking for the stock's personality. We're looking for what the past pattern has been. What's the trend been like? Does it have momentum either up or momentum down? Well, up till this summer, Southwest Airlines had momentum up. But it got just up to almost $35 a share, right around $34.50, and it hit resistance. It was an apex. I mean, it went up to the top of a triangle and then boom, right down to $32. Now, we don't know what's going to happen at this point, right? The outcome of a stock. I mentioned before about gambling. In gambling, you have odds. In investing in the stock market, there are no odds. There are outcomes. And in investing in the stock market, there are only three outcomes. Now, remember, they're not odds, they're outcomes. Here's the difference. When you have odds, for example, flipping a coin, I know if I flip a coin and I flip it long enough, it's going to work out where 50% I'm going to get that coin is going to be a head, 50% of the time it's going to be a tail. I have a 50-50 chance there. I can work out those odds. They're mathematical. They work all the time in every situation. They may fluctuate a little bit, right? Air resistance, temperature of the coin, you know, humidity. I don't know, you know, whether you're at 15,000 feet in the Andes Mountains or whether you're at sea level in Hawaii, yeah, maybe it fluctuates a little bit, but it's about 50%, right? 50-50 odds. Well, in the stock market, you have three outcomes. That stock is either going to go up, it's going to go down, or it's going to stay the same. Those are the outcomes. You can guarantee one of those three things will happen. But what you can't guarantee is the odds. You have no idea what the ratio is. Just because there are three outcomes doesn't mean that there's a 30% likelihood of either one. But you do know that there were only those three outcomes. So right now, when we look at Southwest Airlines, we're saying, hey, it's about $32 a share. Is it going to go up? Is it going to go down? Or is it going to stay the same? And we do that by technical analysis. Now, this is strictly an analysis. It's strictly a formulation of an idea. It's a forecast. Not you, not I, not anyone can know what's going to happen to Southwest Airlines in 2 days or 3 days or 6 months. We have no way of knowing. We don't know if 19 hijackers are going to get on board their airlines and just crash them into buildings. We have no idea if some pilot for Southwest Airlines is going to decide to commit suicide and crash the plane into the side of a building. We have no idea if one of the Boeing jets they own is a lemon or has a flaw in it or has bad maintenance and it's going to crash. We can go on and on with these scenarios. We have no way of knowing. We also have no way of knowing, even though we identified a trend with oil, with petroleum products, we think maybe it's going to go down. We could be wrong. There could be problems in the Middle East. Oil could go up to $145 a barrel in 3 months, and that would have a drastically negative impact on Southwest Airlines. We have no way of knowing that. No one does. Again, we know the outcomes. It's going to go above $32. It's going to go below $32, or it's going to stay the same. But we have no way of predicting odds. It doesn't matter what kind of high-speed trading you use. It doesn't matter what kind of algorithm you have. It doesn't matter if you have a PhD from Harvard. It doesn't matter if you're an economist. None of that matters because no one can predict the future. So here's what we do. We do use technical analysis. And again, this is at a very high level. We're looking at the personality of the stock. We know that for the last year, this stock has gone almost straight up. And now all of a sudden it hit $35 or just below $35 and it came down pretty hard. I mean, it fell nearly 10%. That's a pretty significant move. Now we haven't done our homework enough to know if that's just specific to Southwest or if that's, you know, the transportation stocks in general. Is that the airline stocks in general? Again, those are all things that we would want to do. We wouldn't just spend this, you know, cursory time that you and I are doing right now on this podcast. You'd want to look at those things. But we do know it had a major drop earlier this summer. And like I was mentioning at the beginning of this podcast, when I talked about the trends of the market correction that we're currently in, this stock has come down, say, I don't know, 8% or so. I didn't do the math. Well, just like our laws of physics, a body in motion tends to stay in motion. You know, that's a momentum. That's the same thing a stock has. A stock that's falling tends to continue to fall. A stock that's moving up tends to continue to move up. Now, I said tends to continue because we know there are three outcomes, and we know that nobody can predict the future. So what we're going to do is, as best as we can, we're going to draw out a trend line, and we're going to say that if this stock stays within this trend that we're drawing out, then we'll have particular rules, okay? If it stays above the trend line, we'll keep it, or maybe we'll even add to our position. But if the stock breaks that trend line or falls below that trend line, we're going to sell it. And that's regardless of the fundamentals. Remember, up to this point, we looked at a stock that didn't have too much debt, that had a good profit, that maybe was paying a dividend, that had a lot of liquidity. That's what got us to this point. But now that we're here, we forget about all that. See, we forget about it because we know it's a good, solid stock. But good, solid stocks, their price can still drop precipitously. It all depends on the technical factors. It all depends on these short, little-term trends that are going on in the marketplace. And so with the technical side, we want to draw rules, some kind of rule-based trading. And again, for this brief period we're spending on the podcast, I can't give you a detailed analysis of that, nor would I necessarily be right. Again, you have to do what works best for you. What's important, again, is the consistency. If you develop a certain pattern and say, I'm only going to trade this stock as long as it stays above its 10-day moving average. I'm just using that as an example. If that's your pattern, if that's your algorithm, okay? It doesn't need to be any more complicated than that. Just stick to that pattern. Identify your trends. Find stocks that are fundamentally sound, and you know they meet all your fundamental filters. And then look for a stock that's breaking out above its 10-day moving average, and then stick with it. And then the day that it falls through that 10-day moving average, sell it. If you do that on a consistent basis, you know it doesn't work with just one stock or two stocks. You have to do that over and over again. But by using a pattern like that, generally, and again, generally, this is just general information, if you stick to those rules, you'll find that you're cutting your losses short and you're letting your winners run. And so even though you have maybe two or three or four stocks that you had to sell, they broke that 10-day moving average line, and maybe you had to sell them at a 3% loss, a 5% loss, an 8% or a 10% loss. Right, you may have, you know, two or three or four stocks that do that. Well, you also may have two or three or one stock that goes up 10%, 15%, 30%. Okay, and over time, that's how you build wealth in the stock market. You don't necessarily have more winners than losers in terms of individual stocks, but in absolute terms, you do. You have more profits than you have losses because you let your profits go up and you cut your losses short. Okay? So that's what we're looking for in the on the technical side. We're looking at the chart, and I'm going to drill down a little bit more on this for you. Let's get out of this 5-year chart on Southwest that we're looking at, and let's take it down to a 1-year chart. So we're just looking at the pattern, the performance over the stock over the last 12 months. And again, I can see it. It goes, you know, pretty much straight up at about a 2 o'clock, 2:30 position. As I mentioned, it gets to that point. I've been saying in the summer, it actually was right around the middle of September. It went up, it hit, I said it got close to 35. It looks like it actually hit $35, $35.23, and then it came down from there. So it made a little triangle. You can see that the apex of the triangle there was right around $35. And it looks like it's come down now to this $32 price where it's made like an equilateral triangle, looking at the last, say, 3 months of this stock, the last couple months' performance of this stock. So it went up steeply, you know, from August to September, and then September to October, it came down just as much as it went up, made like an equilateral triangle. Well, that's not enough personality right there to know what it's doing, other than it does look like it has a downward trend going on. But that doesn't mean that it can't go flat for a little bit, reverse and go up, and rise above that $35. That's the kind of things we want to determine with technical features, looking at these charts. Again, you have to identify patterns. You have to look at the volume. You have to look and see how much the price fluctuates in a given day. You're going to develop these particular rules or this algorithm that you use in your own particular trading. I mentioned the 10-day moving average. That's kind of a short-term indicator. That's something that's very easy to do. This chart on Yahoo Finance will draw it for you. I'm going to click, in this case, it says indicator. I I click one of the indicators, it pops up for simple moving averages. It comes up automatically set for the 50-day because, as I've mentioned many times, that's really a key indicator. That's what happens over the period of 2.5 months. Since earnings come out every 3 months, that 2.5-month period is very important. But I don't want to look at a 50-day in this case. I want to look, let me take that back. Okay, so when I look at the 50-day moving average, I do see that the personality of this stock, the personality of Southwest Airlines over the last 12 months, has been to always be above the 50-day moving average or to hit it and bounce off. It hit it once around April 1st, 2014. It hit the 50-day moving average. It bounced up from there. And that's the only time I see in the last 12 months that that stock hit its 50-day moving average. The remainder of the 12 months, it was always, you know, a nice little margin or pattern right above that 50-day moving average. Now, right now, it is about to touch that 50-day moving average again. This could be, and again, I'm not recommending this to you, I'm just giving, illustrating a point. This could be a point to watch on Southwest Airlines. In the next few trading days or in a week or so, watch this stock. Remember the outcomes. When it hits that, if it drops down and it hits that moving average, what's going to happen? It's either going to continue to go down and go through that moving average, it's going to taper out and be unchanged, or it's going to bounce off of that 50-day moving average and go up. Now, I just told you, personality of this stock over the last 12 months has been that it hits that moving average and it moves up. So you can speculate that the likelihood is that it'll hit that moving average, and if it does move up, then it's going to continue to move up because that's what it's done for the last 12 months. And so you might want to purchase the stock if you see it hit that 15-day moving average, and rather than going through it, it moves up. On the other hand, if you see it hit that 50-day moving average and you hold off, you wait till the next day to look at the stock and you see that no, it did not bounce, or no, it did not stay there, boom, it went down, it dropped, you know, 0.5%, 0.75%, 1% below that 50-day moving average. Well, you would say, you know, that's the first time in 12 months that that stock has done that. That's a bad sign. It's an indication that it broke its trend. It's a change in personality, and I'm not going to invest in that stock. I'm not going to get into that stock thinking that, oh, it hit a low point and may go back up. Well, it may have, but it's not exhibiting what its personality had been in the last 12 months. In fact, if you really look at this chart, as I mentioned back in September when it hit that peak up around $35, it actually had gotten significantly higher above the 50-day moving average than it had over the past 12 months. And again, if you look at that chart, you can easily see that. You don't need to have an algorithm or measure it out with a, you know, micrometer. You can just look at it and intuitively see that maybe the stock got a little bit ahead of itself. Maybe it is time for it to hit that 50-day moving average, and then it'll just bounce off and go back up to its normal pattern and just keep moving along, just hovering right above that 50-day moving average. Now, again, we don't know this. This is just speculation. But it is based on the pattern because this stock has a particular personality. Now, if it breaks through that 50-day moving average, it's violated its personality. Right at that point, you could say it has multiple personalities, right? And you don't want to invest in a stock that's psychotic or anything. So you're going to avoid it. You're going to stay away from it. Again, this is just a very simple way of explaining technical analysis. But it can work for you. Let's put in that 10-day moving average that I mentioned. So I'm just going to go here right on Yahoo Finance, it says SMA for simple moving average. I put in 10, I hit enter, it redraws the chart for me, and now I can see something else. And you know what? Now I can see the personality of the stock based on the 10-day moving average as opposed to what we just looked at, which was the 50-day. And you know what? It's very much the same, except it's hovering closer to that 10-day, and you would expect that. So over the last 12 months, the stock generally rides a little bit above the 10-day. It'll bounce off of it. Sometimes it'll go a little bit below it, but then it'll turn around and get right back on the 10-day. It'll get a little ahead of itself sometime, and then boom. But pretty much, it's like a leapfrog. It goes up above the 10-day. It'll come down a little bit. It'll break through the 10-day line. It won't go down much. It'll start to come back up again, cross through the 10-day moving average, back down, back up and down, up and down. Working its way all the way from a low last October 2013 of $16, you know, up to that $35, $32 that it's at now. Again, though, in recent times, it has broken and fallen below that 10-day moving average for, let's just do some quick math here. September 22nd, it looks like it broke through, it bridged the 10-day moving average on September 22nd, and then it looks like the 10-day moving average was acting as resistance. It would come up, it would hit the 10-day, and it would go back down again. It would hit the 10-day and move back down again. And that's lasted now through October 7th. October, you know, that's when my chart goes to, but we're in October like 8th or 9th right now. So roughly, we're talking about a 2.5 week or so, and really been in a downward pattern for about 3 weeks, but about 2.5 of those weeks, it's spent below the 10-day moving average. And as I look at the personality of this stock for the last 12 months, I do not see one, you know, I do not see one 10-day or one 2-week period in 12 months where the price of that stock stayed below the 10-day moving average for that long. I see one period earlier in April where it looks like it may have been under the 10-day moving average line for maybe about a week, but that's it. It went right back above it. I see another point in June of this year where, again, it spent a couple of days, maybe a week, below the 10-day moving average. Another couple of days in August. But for the rest of the year, for the most part, it either was above the 10-day moving average or it was hovering right on the 10-day moving average. Would not spend more than a day or two below the 10-day moving average. That has not been the case for the last 2.5 weeks. Again, that's a change in personality. We saw a change in personality on the 50-day moving average. We've now seen a change of personality on the 10-day moving average. That could be an indication that Southwest Airlines, remember, three outcomes. It's going to go above $32. It's going to stay at $32, or it's going to go below $32. Right now, just based on these few minutes we've spent in technical analysis, looking at the 50-day moving average trend line, looking at the 10-day moving average trend line, I would say 2 out of 2, this stock violated its personality, and then rather than moving above $32, I think it's going to go below $32. Again, not make a recommendation. Just in the few minutes we've had to analyze this stock, that's what I think. And I'm saying that using technical analysis. Now, I also said earlier what led us to this whole thing was, well, hey, these guys are a U.S. carrier, so they're not subject to headwinds from a rising U.S. dollar. These guys are a major user of petroleum products, and it looks like there's a secular global trend for lower oil prices. So right there, that's a couple trends that look like it might be in the favor, might be moving in the general direction of helping this stock. But I'm vetoing all that just by looking at the technical analysis. And I'm vetoing that because that's how important technical analysis is. Technical analysis is the decision point. Technical analysis tells you whether it's time to buy that stock or whether it's time to sell that stock. Okay, remember, the fundamentals and the trends, they tell you, they offer general guidance as to which indexes or which stocks you should perhaps be buying or which ones you shouldn't be buying, but they don't actually give you the indicator of, you know, yes, buy or no, don't buy or time to sell. That's what you get from the technical analysis. You learn that from the chart, and that's where you let the market tell you what's happening. Right now, with this stock moving down, we can assume that we're not the smartest guys in the room. We can assume that other people on Wall Street and in other places know better than us what's happening with the U.S. dollar. They know what's happening better than us as to what's happening with petroleum prices. And for whatever reason, for the last 2.5 weeks, they've been selling out of Southwest Airlines. And when I drop down and look at the volume of it, in some cases, they've been selling significantly high. Back around September 19th, September 20th, huge increase in volume in selling that day. So that tells us from a technical nature that although this stock seems to be fundamentally sound, it seems to be being favored by, you know, more than one, maybe two trends. Yet for some reason, it's broken its personality and people are selling it. Now that doesn't mean that we take it off of our watch list because we're convinced that, hey, we have these secular trends going on. We have both, you know, we have a couple strong trends, it looks like. We have a stock that looks like it's fundamentally sound. They've got they're profitable. They pay a dividend. They're highly liquid. They have a lot of money. You know, they have more than $1 billion of cash laying around. Looks like a good fundamental company. It's also a company that, from a technical standpoint, it looks like you could pretty much predict its personality. It looks like it always stays above or bounces off that 50-day, or it always hovers right around its 10-day. These are all good signs. Let's keep Southwest on our watch list, but let's not buy it today. And when I say let's not buy it today, remember, we're currently in a market correction. Investors Business Daily has the market in correction status. Remember, for the last week or so, the markets have been very volatile. As we said, we're on thin ice. The S&P 500, the NASDAQ, they're both below their 50-day moving average. They're both acting very erratically. They're both exhibiting wide trading swings, being very volatile. We don't want to go into the water. We don't want to go out under the ice on the lake. But we do like this stock. We do like Southwest. And so we're going to put it on our watch list. And maybe when we see the major index is moving out of a correction, maybe that will be the time to buy Southwest. Maybe at that point we'll see that that's when Southwest bounces off its 50-day moving average. Maybe that'll be the time when, rather than hovering below the 10-day moving average, where the 10-day moving average is acting at resistance, maybe it'll break above it at that point. And maybe that's when we'll jump in and buy. But it doesn't look like that's happening right now. And so we just keep this on our watch list. And that's how technical analysis works. And it's also a perfect example of how I talked way too much. I've spent way too much time talking about this. I didn't get into the nuts and bolts of the actual trade. So when we come back on the next episode, we'll take the same example for Southwest, and we'll pretend that we're going to purchase it. And then we'll actually break it down. We'll go through each of the steps, each of the decision points, the flow chart that you want to follow for the nuts and bolts mechanical part of purchasing. And I mean, literally, go to the website, put in the ticker symbol, decide that you want to purchase, 100 or 200 shares. Is it a market order? Is it a day order? Do you put in a stop loss? And then when do you take a profit? And then what are the tax consequences of that? We'll talk about all that in the next episode. Until then, again, I want to welcome all the new listeners. I want to thank those of you that continue to go out there on Stitcher and on particularly on iTunes, putting in comments. We're up over, I think 20 comments or so on iTunes. I really appreciate that. We're getting a lot of consistent downloads from iTunes. If you haven't subscribed yet from iTunes and you do use iTunes, please do that. Go out and subscribe to the show. It helps us with the ratings. If you do want to give us a review, that would be fantastic. I'd really appreciate that. I love getting all your emails. Again, I'm way behind in answering people. I can't get out and answer all the emails. I do read them, and I will be going back. You may have even emailed me in the last week or two, and you could still get a reply because I just have been very busy and unable to get back to some of the people that I did want to respond to. So watch your mailbox. Maybe you'll get something from me. And then again, I do want to remind you about the contest. It'll be at least a 1-hour conversation with me on the telephone or on Skype. I'll field answer whatever questions you have for me. All you need to do is pick out which of the 10 wealth building principles you think is the least downloaded. Let me know that through the website, wealthsteading.com. I'll take entries for that contest all the way up through October 26th, 11 p.m. West Coast time. I'll do a random drawing from all the people to get the right answer. I'll announce that winner sometime during the week of the 27th of October, and we'll schedule a 1-hour call with you. Looking forward to it. I always enjoy talking to members of the audience. Thanks so much for listening. As always, this is John Pugliano wishing you the very best of returns.